Hey, this is J-Lo, and you're checking out the Juan Epstein podcast.
That's it?
That's Beautiful. It.
You didn't say anything exciting?
Like what?
Like,
listen, I don't do what you do. Tell me. Give me direction.
Okay. I'm with a really handsome Jewish man named Peter Rosenberg, and also handsome and slimming Cypher Sounds.
I like it. I'll take it.
Oh, fuck. Okay. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. I'm not you. Okay. Say it again.
You don't have to, you can describe me how
I'll
you
do
want.
It. I'll do it. No, I want you to.
A very handsome Jewish man named Peter Rosenberg.
I'm with the very handsome Jewish man, Peter Rosenberg.
And his portly but handsome brother.
You didn't say portly last time.
I'm not going to say that. I would not say that about my son. And the very in shape and getting more in shape as every moment goes on, Cypher Sounds.
Yes.
And this is the Juan Epstein podcast.
Hey, good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
Good night.
Fourth meal. I want it. I'm sorry.
What do you want?
I want Taco Bell. I want Taco Bell tonight.
We're going back?
I want to go back. I want him as a sponsor. I really do. By the way, I meant to say before we get to our guest, I'm a little pissed off at Questlove.
Why?
Because he's such a big fan of Juan Epstein.
Right.
He told us this, so I'm assuming you'll hear this at some point.
Uh-huh.
And when I hosted the Root Show a few weeks ago,
yeah.
I took a promo Juan Epstein shirt
uh-huh.
and brought it and just left it on his drum set.
Uh-huh.
Not a word. And I even texted him being like, yo, did you get what I left for you? No reply since.
No, he didn't get it. Somebody took it off. The roadie was like, who the fuck put this filthy t-shirt on the drum?
I hope so, because I hurt my feelings. I thought it was a thoughtful gift.
Someone jacked it.
Hey, guys. Very, very excited to have Jermaine Dupri in the house on Juan Epstein.
What up? Woo! What up?
JD, before we get to your amazing history in this game, which needs to be highlighted. Tell us about who you brought with you, your newest artist, at least that I know of.
To my right is a new artist by the name of Royce Rizzy, formerly known as Rolls Royce Rizzy, but now that he has a deal, Rolls Royce will want their money, so we can't say that no more. So for anybody out there that knew him as Rolls Royce Rizzy, his name is Royce Rizzy now, and I met him on the internet, you know what I mean? Should I tell the story? Or should
Shit, give us a little spiel.
I was just like on the internet checking out different kids artists that's like in Atlanta, and it was this group called We Are Tunes, right?
We Are Tunes.
They had the Nene song,
yeah.
Right? So when the Nene song actually first broke out, I was out of town and I wasn't home to see exactly the explosion of what was going on in Atlanta. So I jumped on the internet to try to see schools and see everybody actually doing it. And when I was plugging in, looking at videos, the kids that actually dance, what's the dancing team called?
Superbad.
Yeah, the Superbad guys. Superbad. They was dancing to Rizzy's record. Now, it could have been a trap for somebody, but, you know, I don't think they would have ever thought I was going to stumble upon their video on YouTube. So at first I thought it was like, you know, they probably did this as a promotion piece, because I've seen this done like that before. But I mean, I kept stumbling and going through, and I heard it more and more times, and I'm like, this ain't a promotion piece. It's something else with this record. And then I listened to the record, and the record spoke to the way I actually talk. And I say, goddamn, after everything that I say. Like, you say you want to go to Taco Bell, I would have said, we got to go to goddamn Taco Bell tonight.
Is that an Atlanta thing?
That's an Atlanta thing.
Okay.
So it just became like a, it was just
yeah,
like
that's
a,
true. Okay, yeah, when you say it like that, you're right, I have heard that a lot of times.
So it's like, when I heard that, I'm like, you know, this is really Atlanta, and that's all I am. You know what I mean? And that became the synergy. At that point, I didn't know where we was going to go, what we was going to do with it. I just was like, you know, I'm going to put a verse on this because this really speaks to what I
do. Have you heard the record yet, Type?
No.
It's a good tune. This is a good song. How much is it starting to move?
Yeah, it's starting to move. I mean, you know, it's very interesting because I guess, you know, Jermaine Dupri is looked at as a commercial guy, right? I guess people look at me as a commercial guy. But I sign a lot of artists that make records that don't just get on the radio. You know what I mean? Like, this song is not a radio record. It's called Goddamn. It's a hip-hop rap record that deserves to be on hip-hop rap radio. So when people ask if it's moving, it's not moving the way your traditional So-So Def record moves. It's moving the way we would move Bone Crusher or the other hip hop artists that I've put out that people probably don't pay
that started in the clubs and then built their way there.
Yeah,
so. I think the record, I mean, I'm not just saying that because y'all here. Inka sent me the record last week when he said y'all were coming up. And I listened to it. To me, it sounds like a record that'll go in clubs and eventually mix show on radio as well. I mean,
oh yeah, it's definitely
it's gonna go.
It's definitely gonna do that. But you have the people that initially that like down where we live at, we got stations that call themselves hip hop stations, and when they heard this, they turned into Bible Belt stations.
You're like, oh, because the word.
Yeah, and I'm
is there an edit? What's the edit for it?
You gotta do got.
Yeah, we did a whole nother version. We got a whole new version.
Hot. Let me taste them right now.
Hot. I'm gonna taste them.
Remember when we had a Hot Damn Dough record? That didn't work either.
I hated it. Hot Damn sucked when they changed it. But the annoying thing about that one was,
I love that song, by the way.
No, Hot Damn's amazing. But here's the thing. It was already not goddamn.
Right.
It was already cot damn.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they changed it.
Doesn't matter. It sounds like
damn. Come on. Like, that was why they changed. And then it got to Hot Damn and it got weird. I was on radio at PGC at the time in DC. I hated when it went to
hot glue.
They can't say damn.
Yeah, so that basically, you know. So it just, we changed it already and we got a clean version that doesn't even say damn or hot or got or anything that's close remotely to it.
Well, you know, slop jam.
Syph and I are doing an A3C showcase. We should have him come through and bless that song.
We're going to be in Atlanta.
There's
no way why we
should. I mean, how would you not come through?
Come on, let's go.
So we'll work that out. You should come through and bless that joint. So.
It'd be dope.
Yeah, where in Atlanta are you from?
I'm not from
Atlanta. Where are you from?
Like, my pop's in the military, so I moved around a lot. Like,
what different places you lived in?
I lived in Oakland, Hawaii, Texas, DMV, Tokyo. So I just lived all around.
Like, wow, you're a real military brat, huh? You did the whole thing. Yeah, how was Hawaii, though? How it worked out?
I was too young to remember.
Damn.
So, yeah, that was one of the...
God damn.
I can only remember, like, really, like, the D.C., Maryland area and then Tokyo.
Oh, really?
My whole high school in Japan.
You speak Japanese?
Chotamate. A little bit. I can, you know, I got enough to, like, get around.
Syph, use your one word. Use, like, your five words used on every Japanese person.
It works with cute girls.
Oh, what is the line? Well, what does it translate to?
Kawaii, or what is
it? What does it translate to, though, when you say it?
Cute girl.
Is that literally it?
Cute girl.
You just know the phrase. You didn't say...
I know a little bit.
You were like, hey, what do I say to cute girl? I was like, no, just say cute girl. Where in DMV?
I lived all over the Northern Virginia area and then some of Maryland a little bit. My pops worked at the Pentagon for a lot of years.
Oh, so you did all that?
Yeah, we just bounced around.
That's where I'm from. Anywhere, you remember where you were in Maryland?
Waldorf.
Oh, really?
Upper Marlboro.
Upper Marlboro is better than Waldorf. Waldorf. Yeah. Well, let me tell you about Waldorf. Oof. I don't even know if I've ever been to Waldorf, but I just heard the name, didn't want to go. All right, so right now, do you guys have an album in the works or anything, or is this just like a single situation?
Right now, I pretty much put the single out. We put the single out, did the big remix, like hoping we shake something and working on the EP, finishing the EP, just trying to get everybody's attention to really see, like, you know, what I got going on. And album, we're going to wait, like, till it's time for it. But the EP is really, the single we pushing, and the EP is coming out on the 1st. September, so.
He calling an EP, it's a mixtape, but
it's new music.
It's a mixtape EP to let people know more in the style of this guy as opposed to what you hear from one song.
All right, JD, you were a DJ first? Before anything?
Dancer first.
Yeah. God, you're old school. That's how you know it's classic. When you start as a dancer, you're real, son.
Yeah, I was a dancer first.
And how seriously, like, did it go?
Pretty serious.
How, like, did you, like, background dance for people? And
Yeah.
For who?
Houdini. Man, get your shit straight, Rosenberg.
So why didn't you jump in there, jerk off?
I
didn't know it was a
dance. I didn't know you were asking.
I didn't know you danced.
Mark Kent just said he saw him on Fresh Fest. Who do you think he was on Fresh Fest with?
Houdini.
Yeah.
I was actually on Fresh Fest by myself.
You know what I mean.
Then I actually, then we became friends, and then Houdini was like, you know, you should come, you know. They didn't ever ask me to dance with them. I was little. When you're young, you get a lot of passes where people don't even ask you to do stuff. You could just jump on stage.
Like, oh, it's cute. Yeah, it's cute. How old were you?
I was 12.
Now, but a lot of people don't know this. JD is pretty small in real life. When he was 12, he was actually a foot and a half tall. he was unbelievable. So you just, how did you end up on Fresh Fest, though, as a kid?
Well, like, you know, it's the same thing, like, the same. No, it was the same thing. Fresh Fest was created in Atlanta. So it's by this guy named Ricky Walker, who's from Atlanta, who created the tour in Atlanta. My father was actually the stage manager or the road manager for the show.
Did you know that, Syph?
No, I didn't
know. Exactly.
That. And then, you know, they all, you know.
Javier Dupree.
At this time, back in the day, when, you know, like, new artists come out and they get on shows, same way. You know, so they was like, we need somebody to open this tour. And at that point, it was like, you know, dancers, basically. Not like...
Just dancing to the newest music?
Yeah, whatever. Just if you could dance and you could get the crowd going for a minute before the big-time artist wanted to come out. So it was like, you know, you go up here and dance. You little guy, go do what you got to do.
By yourself?
Yeah, I did it by myself the first time. I danced to, like, Michael Jackson, State of Shock, and... Whoever, who else was that song? Was he with Michael Jackson? And
it's funny. I always see that record and don't really know the record that well. I always see
it
out.
It was somebody like that.
Yeah, yeah, it's a random record.
Yeah, so yeah, so State of Shock was the record I was dancing to. That record was hot back then, and I danced and the crowd liked it, and I didn't go over my minutes, and I did what I had to do and got in and got out, and it was like Ricky was like, you know what, we should keep him. And at that point, like, dancing was. Like, people used to go crazy when people just dance. You know what I'm saying? And if you saw somebody like my age that could really dance, break, pop, do whatever, people was really, like, overexcited about it.
So you did that.
Yeah.
You meet Houdini.
Met everybody. That's basically my entrance to hip-hop. I met Run DMC. I met everybody. Whoever was hip-hop at that point. Russell Simmons. I met LL Cool J before
Curtis.
He came out. Curtis Blow. Like, you know, Curtis Blow was headlining the tour. That's what's even
crazy. Were Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde on this tour?
Nah, they wasn't on there.
Who else was on Fresh Fest? Eh?
It was the Fat Boys.
Fat Boys,
DMC,
of course.
Houdini, Grandmaster Flash, Curtis Blow.
Mm. How big was the place? Was it there?
Arenas.
It was arenas.
It was the first arena.
First arena hip hop
tour. First arena hip hop tour.
It was packed.
Yeah.
Yo, you know how hip hop that is? That you were part of that?
Yeah. 100%.
Crazy.
That's insane to have even. Like, if I had just gone, I would, like, show my stub to people, like, hip hop. You were on the stage.
I mean, but they don't, like, people don't really understand that no more. Like, you can't even talk about stuff that I saw. And that it ain't even like I can't find 10 people in a room that can even relate to what I'm talking about.
When what year was this, you said?
Like 84, 85, and 86, come straight through.
You did all
I did all three tours.
So who did was it always the same? Who'd they add to it?
That's what I'm saying. Like in 84, 85, like in 86, Grandmaster Flash came. That's when they had the Larry Love song. So Grandmaster Flash came on.
Surprising that Flash was on the later one, not the earlier one.
Yeah, he wasn't part of the early one. You know, that's just when they got back together and it was a bigger group, Grandmaster Flash and like the Furious 10 or something like it seemed like. But anyway, so they got back and it was like, who else? Houdini, UTFO got on the tour. And UTFO used to be background dancers for Houdini. So they went from... They went from dancing with Houdini to becoming artists and having Roxanne records. So, LL. I mean, LL got close to being on the Fresh Fest.
Like, he was there. He was around.
He was there. Like when you go to Philly, like, Philly was, like, coming to a show in New York for some reason. Because, by the way, New York wouldn't allow hip-hop in Madison Square Garden. So... The Fresh Fest was at Nassau Coliseum. It wasn't at Madison Square.
Oh, it looked exactly the same as it does now.
Oh, yeah, it did? Only it was popping.
You know, so
Now, I have to imagine that at this point, you started at this very young age, 12 to 15, building the relationships in New York and with these people that were based here that you've had to this day.
Yes.
Some of them had to have started right then.
The same day.
Like Russell?
Everybody. Like, when I see these guys, I mean, Russell probably thinks I'm, like, his son or somebody. Like, or he probably don't even understand, like, I've seen this kid all my life. But he's really seen me all my life. But he probably saying it, like.
It's been his whole life.
His whole life.
That's absolutely crazy.
But when I hear Russell tell stories, like, about him doing cocaine and all of this, I was there.
Oh, you saw him wilding out.
Yeah.
You were there for the wild out Russell phase.
I've been around that Russell.
I can't imagine the things and conversations you've seen.
Yeah, I've seen it all. I'm Jeezy.
So exactly. So you get off of you finish up that stuff. You're 14, 15 years old. Yeah. You must be gassed at this point.
No, I'm actually just like what's the Johnny Five? That's who I am at that point.
What do you mean?
I'm just absorbing everything that I could.
Data or no input? What did he say in the movie?
Who, Johnny?
Yeah.
Input? Yeah. I'm just grabbing up everything that I could possibly grab. So that's basically how DJing became. You know, I became a graffiti artist. I was trying to do everything. I lived with Say Adams, who was a great graffiti artist. He actually showed me how to write. You know, actually how to write my name and actually really really throw up a tag and this, that, and the third. So I was like lost in that, and I was dancing, and I was also watching people DJ. And then at the time, you know, they Charlie Stetler, I don't know if you know Charles Stetler, he was the Fat Boys manager. He was managing this kid named Chad Elliott. He managed Chad Elliott. He was like, you know what? Chad and Jermaine should make a group. So Chad and Jermaine became the first crisscross that, you know.
What were you called?
Chad and Jermaine. But, you know.
Did anything come out?
A light-skinned guy and a brown-skinned guy. And basically looks, if you looked at it now, today, you would say, this was crisscross.
Did you guys come out?
Yeah, we came out. I mean, it was independent. We put a record out, but we was on the tour, so it didn't even really matter. We was like, we automatically had a stay on the tour.
Crazy.
Did the song pop at all anywhere?
Nah, it never really.
Nothing came. Nothing
I mean,
much...
We never really signed to a major.
Right.
I mean, at this point, you know, this was like really like, you know, disco fever days. You had to really have. You had to be on a major. Like, the independence wasn't that. You know, you could have an indie record, but it had to get picked up at that really back then.
So, did you, you also started DJing, you're doing everything at this point.
Well, like I'm saying, so after the tour, you know, like you said, majority of my friends and people that I knew was here in New York. So, I came to New York, I lived in Brooklyn on Eastern Parkway, and I stayed with Chad.
I didn't know that.
I became, like, a New Yorker. Like, I know Clark Kent from being in Brooklyn, and I just, you know what I mean? I started going to get my haircuts at Knapp's, and I was... in Fort Greene Projects.
Who are you living with?
Why I'm there and just like.
Who are you living with?
I was living with Chad.
And you guys are both kids?
Yes. His mother. Chad's from New York. So
oh, okay,
he, yeah,
okay.
He's
so you're and your parents were cool with this?
Yeah, I mean it was all like my dream to be in the music industry, and it basically was leading directly down that road. If I got to stay where I was, I mean, you know, I was still doing schooling and home study and all that, but it was just like it was completely.
But when you were living in New York, did you like go hang out with Houdini?
Where, in New York?
Yeah.
I couldn't get into places. I still was, you know, it wasn't like you know, just because I was with them, it didn't matter. I still was a kid, you know what I mean? So it was like I couldn't get in too many places, and I wasn't really like, I was kind of like. Yo, I'm not going to get into the dirt of the world, so I was kind of like a standoffish. You know what I mean? I'm from Atlanta, so I'm still a little shell-shocked.
Country,
like I'm seeing
the
stuff that's like...
And you're from Atlanta when Atlanta was not remotely Atlanta.
Nothing. Well, they had Dukes of Hazzard.
Exactly. Dukes of Hazzard, come on.
No, they had TBS.
That's not Atlanta.
Yeah.
Outside of Atlanta, Hazzard County.
I don't even know where that's at.
No, listen, they had TBS, the Braves were on.
You never saw the episode of Dukes of Hazzard when they drove to Atlanta?
Huh.
It wasn't that far.
It was not.
Reasonable drive? Reasonable drive. All right. So you were a good kid, kind of, still just trying to learn and hang back and figure this thing out.
I just knew that I wanted this life. You know what I mean? I wanted to do what I was doing. I wanted to be around. I wanted to see, you know what I mean? So I tried to go as many places as I could go. I'm one of the few that can say they ever went to the Disco Fever. Who you know can, like, come up here today and say they went to the Fever?
Not many left.
I mean, unless they, like, a super old-school rapper. I'm not even super old-school rapper. I'm not even old-school, by the way. Ooh. I just went because I was young.
That's crazy that you were in so early. So when do you go back to Atlanta and start this whole thing?
So crazy enough, oddly enough, on the tour, I became really, really close friends with Houdini. Houdini started dating these girls from Atlanta. And these girls,
they did.
These girls that they started they dating,
mm-hmm. were freaks they, come out at
were
nine.
Were the main girls out of all the girls that they was dating. Yeah. They took these two main girls from Atlanta and made them their main girls.
So two Houdini guys took two girls from Atlanta.
Yeah, they made them main girls. So I met the girls on tour, and the girls was like, you know, you know, we live in Atlanta. And I'm like, really? I think we met somewhere way far away from Atlanta. And I'm like, oh. So it's like, they was like, you know, y'all should hook up, pick JD up, take him out. It's our little brother, blah, 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 blah. So it was like, yeah, I got a ride. I got some
older girls, friends. Yeah,
yeah, whoa, this is cool. So I get back home. I'm calling them like, yo, pick me up. Let's go. They picking me up. They buying me food. They taking me, you know, they doing what they guys told them to do. So I don't know. Something clicked in my head at while I was hanging around them that you girls should rap and I should be a producer. And I'm sure, like, that sounded crazy as hell to them. Like, what are you talking about? And, you know, what Clark Kent was telling you is that I created a group called Silk Times Leather, which was that group that we're talking about, right? That was those girls.
Silk Times Leather.
Yes.
And what happened with Silk Times Leather? Did you get them signed?
Yeah. I got them signed to Warner Brothers.
And how old were you at the time?
16.
And you did the beats?
Yeah, I did the whole album. I wrote the album.
How is the album?
Terrible.
You wrote all the songs?
I wrote all the songs, and I produced all the records.
Jesus. When you say you produced, by the way, and this is something I think a lot of people don't know about you, were you hands-on producing everything?
Yeah, I make everything.
Like, what's your really? What's your machine of choice?
I mean, MP, any MP I use, but I
touched the 3000 and heard that fucking signature hi-hat.
The 3000 is what I use.
And it was on. I was like,
he said I touched it.
Talk about
this. Yeah.
Where was that? In Atlanta? You were shooting something?
In his office, Social Dev office, I think.
Up here?
No, in Atlanta.
In Atlanta. So you made this whole album with Warner Brothers. Did anything pop off from the album at all?
Yeah, it got enough recognition to make Crisscross notice me. So this is how the story leads. It goes like they had this article in Ebony or Essence or something like that about female rap. And the girls, Silk Times Leather, they actually were included in this. So, I mean, we made enough noise to get
to
included.
Get that.
We
got, right.
Yeah, we made enough noise to get included into a major story about female rap. So I'm walking through the mall with one of the girls from the group. And the guys, Chris and Chris, their mother sees the girl from the group. And she's like, yo, that's that girl from that group. And the guys is like, we don't know who you're talking about. And you sound crazy. Long story short, you know, fast forward. They come meet us. She asks us, da, 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 yeah. And I'm looking at these kids saying.
Whose mom was it?
Chris Kelly's
mom.
Yeah, Chris Kelly's
mom.
Yeah, Chris Kelly. Did you say Chris's?
Yeah.
Well, that's crazy because that's how I talk to them. Like, I could say Chris to either one of them, and they always knew which one I was talking to. Right? I never say Chris
how?
One. It was just like, that's just connection that we had. Like, I could always just say, Chris, stop. And the one that I'm talking to, he would stop.
So how old were they when their mom approached you?
11. 10 and 11.
10 and 11, and you're like 16, 17?
17.
Okay. So how did she sell you on them? Was she like, they're really...
Well, she didn't sell me on them. She's trying to get the girl's autograph that's with me.
Oh, okay.
I'm in the background. She didn't even know who I was. Because I'm not in the article, by the way. I'm not.
Oh, that you
not,
weren't even in the article.
Not my picture or nothing.
Okay.
I'm not in the article. So she's trying to get the girl's autograph. I'm in the background looking at these guys, and I'm looking at the surroundings of the people that's looking at the whole thing that's happening. So it's people that's looking at the mom get the autograph, but it's also kids that's checking these two little boys out that don't even have a record. And I'm like,
well, why were they?
What was worthy of them checking out?
They just
were they
fly.
Fresh?
They just
little kids.
Yeah, they just was in the club. I mean, they was just in the mall looking fresher than they supposed to be.
They didn't perform or anything. They didn't.
No,
they
were just looking fresher than
they
should.
In the mall looking fresher than they were supposed to.
That's
be.
A great.
Like, if you see an 11-year-old kid,
yeah, I know what
1990.
You're saying.
Yep. With a box and it's tapered right, and he got his paw.
So his mom was fresh?
Sneakers. Nah, I mean, well, I wasn't paying no attention to her. I couldn't even remember. I just know I saw
somebody kids. Older was fresh and kept them fresh.
Nah, this was just they thing. Mm. And it was like I said, it was so organic for them to just go to the mall. They knew they had the right sneakers on. They had the right haircuts. They had the right clothes on. You like nothing about them was wrong at that day, and I was like, "What do you guys do?" Yeah. This is a question I asked them. We don't do nothing. We just chill. And that attitude threw me completely off.
You just got that. You just summed up Crisscross in a sentence.
Flat out.
That is what their vibe always was.
Flat out. We don't do nothing. We just chill. And they threw me. They threw me a whole loop that day. I was like, "This is amazing."
So do you know at that point? Do the idea is right there?
Immediately. Because I've never seen this before.
So you signed them on Look Alone.
Look Alone.
That's good. That is good stuff. So how long did it take between that and getting them in the studio to see if they were even capable of doing this?
Well, I got them in the car. Once I get you, like, my thing was with Crisscross was that if they can memorize, I was thinking the whole time when I left the mall, I was like, yo, matter of fact, I think I told a girl, the DJ, Diamond X from Silk Times Leather, I told her, like, yo, if they could memorize raps, they'd be the biggest rap group in the world. That's like what I told her. And I was like, we get them in a room and they know people's raps, it's over with. And that's all I wanted to see. So I went and got them, drove them to my house, and they was in the back, like, reciting Ice Cube and all kind of shit. And I was like,
I'm good.
Whoa. And I'm talking about they was doing it, like, bar for bar, like, dead on. I'm like, oh, this is getting ready to be too easy.
So how long did you get the deal before you made Jump?
No. We Jump was the last song I made in the process of making a record. The Crisscross first single would have been Lil Boys in the Hood. That's the song that got them signed. So it was like, I had a whole picture for Rough House about that. Like, Lil Boys in the Hood, like, speaking about how kids see violence and people don't really take what the way they see it. Like, somebody will shoot somebody in front of a little kid and don't even care about it. Before they shoot somebody in front of a grown-up. Like, they'll smoke you in front of, like, with little kids in front of you, like, the kids not gonna remember this.
Right.
But kids have memories of this. Like, it's just like the little kid in Boys in the Hood when he's like, you want to see a dead body? Like, they seen all of this. They see all of it, and they see stuff that we don't actually even see when we doing this.
And naturally, you wrote the song?
Yeah.
Every word?
Every word.
Do you write every word of Totally Crossed Out?
Every word.
But you didn't want to get anyone else involved, or you just figured?
It just came
naturally. That's what I do.
You just sat down and you're like, I'm a desire.
So you wrote, some of them try to rhyme, but they can't rhyme like this.
Bo.
All of it.
Every bo. Did they ever change things? Would they ever improvise?
Not that time. Not that
I mean, you like, the difference with me as a writer is that I stay in the studio 24, 25 hours, whatever many hours it is. I think it's more hours than 24. So, for artists, you have to outwork me, or you're going to lose the battle of trying to argue with me if it's right.
Because you're going to be there longer working
on it. I'm going to stay there longer. You know what I mean? Like, even when I write for Usher, the thing with it is like, Usher come to the studio and he'll give me an idea, and then it's like the night gets too long for him to just sit there. Because, I mean, as a producer, you're just in the studio like this, and the beat's playing, and you're just there. And it's like, you might sit there for like 2 hours. And not even the beat, don't even, then you change the whole beat. As a real producer, that's how producers do. So majority of artists that are into being flamboyant and going out and getting girls and drinking and all this, they can't sit in the studio and like take that process of just sitting there for 4 hours. So when you leave the studio, you basically have jeopardized yourself of writing the song with me, because I'm going to finish it.
If there was an argument. Okay, so the last record you finished is Jump, and was it Jump and Instant Smash? I was in seventh grade, yeah. It was Instant Smash. Yeah. Right?
Instant.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. It was the first time radio got to it. It was over. Dun.
Well, it actually wasn't radio. It was the box. The video.
Was the video pop? Did pop?
The video was, once these little girls started paying their mother's money on the box, and they was getting.
Did y'all see some good money from the box?
What?
That was good money, huh?
What?
Good. What was the percentage like on that?
I mean, I don't even remember. It's just stupid. It was retarded. It was like out of control. But that was
when the record company
calls you and says that the group is getting children in trouble, that's when you know.
What trouble were they getting people? Oh, from spending too much money.
Every time you requested it cost.
Yeah.
Like, people was getting their bills back and it was just saying crisscross. Because it wasn't like, and they was paying over and over to see this video.
Crazy.
So, and then the clothes, of course. Well, whose idea was the clothes?
Mine.
The backwards thing?
Yeah.
Did they resist it?
No.
They were down with it?
Yeah, because, at the same time, TLC was my group, too. So, Left Eye was at the house when I was creating Crisscross. And Left Eye was creating, the patch over.
TLC was your group?
Yeah, TLC was my group.
Before
they went to LaFace, before they was with Pebbles, they was my group.
What?
And I was just too young to actually move both of them. So, like, if you see that movie that they did on VH1, when they got that call to go meet with Pebbles, I should have been the person that they was talking to when they got the call.
Right.
But they cut me out the movie.
Yeah, well, you know how it is.
Yeah, you know how that goes.
But,
I had T-Boz, if you ever interview T-Boz, she'll tell you, the reason she sounds the way she sounds is because she was trying to mock me. She's trying to sing my demos. My voice is low when I'm singing, so I'm pressing her to sing, I want you to sound like me. Don't sing it like you would try to sing it the way I sing it. So the reason T-Bot's whole style is, she's singing, trying to mimic my demo.
But
sort of like how Jason Alexander mimics Larry David.
Woo! Yeah, it was really amazing. But hold on, but here's the thing. But you don't ever sing on records, do you, as a main vocal? You've never done a lead vocal track. So T-Boz, presumably, is a much better singer than you, who naturally still, because you, the way you wrote the songs and the cadences, tried to sing it like you.
I would say Usher is a much
Example?
A better example. Yeah.
Who sings in your style, even though his voice is phenomenal. Yeah. And you're, how would you describe your singing? You an average singer?
Who, me?
Yeah.
No. I mean, I sing, it's funny because I just having the same, if you go to my Instagram, Monica was talking about this. I sing all the demos and I sing them however I want to sing them because I believe that the people that I'm singing them for will hear them as them. And they do. It translates to them as them. As opposed to sounding like me.
But
it,
back in the day, but when T-Boz started, she was just doing it to sound like
thing.
You.
It was the same thing. I mean, we had a conversation, right? And I'm telling her, like, it don't sound right going in the high voice. You got to do it the way I did it. And when she started doing it, it was like she was stuck on it. And every song, she wanted it to sound like that.
Right, so then that became her style. Because she was so young that she didn't have a sound yet.
How did you find them?
I found Left Eye because... a guy named Ian Burke, is like basically the chain link to everybody in Atlanta. He found Organized Noise. He found Outkast. He don't get credit that he's supposed to, but this guy was basically the chain to everybody. He brought me Escape. He was just the chain. So he introduced me to Left Eye. Left Eye was this girl, that female rapper, that he was like, yo, JD, you got to work with her. I was actually working with her. Then they found T-Boz. They put T-Boz and Left Eye together, and it was like that was the group that we had. Then we put Crystal in the group, who was the C that got cut out the movie.
They skipped that part altogether.
Yeah, she's in the movie. She was the headliner from Arrested Development. Ian helped put Arrested Development together, too.
So the girl Crystal from Arrested Development?
Yeah, she was the DJ's girlfriend, and she was in Arrested Development. She was in TLC.
Wow.
Whew.
Yeah.
Before Arrested Development.
Yeah, before Chili.
Yeah,
the rest of Element was going and moving.
It was already going. It was before Chili, pre-Chili. Wow. Okay, then they swiped her out and put in Chili.
Yeah.
All right, hold on. We're getting off the beaten path. So
that's a
crazy story. Yeah. We needed that left. So the album.
So you know you're in the house. T-Boz is there. No, I'm sorry. Left Eye's there.
Yeah.
And how did you get to the backwards clothes?
That's what I'm saying. So Left Eye's in the house. You know, this is cross-color country at this point. Everybody's it's loud at my house.
Deception was off.
I got a yellow box I got a high cut fade with a jerry curl, but it's golden at the top. And I got a part right here. I look like Kwame mixed with Big Daddy Kane and a bunch of other people. So we got all of this going on in my house, and it's just really like a factory of artist development. That's what it is. It's a day in and day out of people trying to do things.
Was this your own house at this point?
It's my mother's house.
It was in your mom's house.
But it's all happening in my room. It's not happening in the house.
It's in your room.
It's all come in my room and close the door.
Oh, this is amazing. All right.
So, Left Eye actually lived in my room, in my closet, and my mother didn't even know.
How big was your closet?
It wasn't big. It wasn't nothing.
Walking,
like
though.
Yeah, it was walking.
Nice.
I mean, it had two sides. You could lay down.
Well, Atlanta had cheap property in Atlanta. So.
We lived in a four-bedroom house.
It was a very middle-class situation.
Yeah, I wouldn't say middle-class. It's another class before lower.
Okay. Lower middle-class.
Lower middle class, I guess.
Middle lower.
Middle lower class.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's before you get there. Yeah. So we had that type of class, I guess. Yeah.
So wait, so who figured out the backwards thing?
So the backwards thing was a suggestion that I had one day. We was going to the mall.
Well, their name was Crisscross already?
They was Chris and Chris.
Okay. The Crisscross got to get in there somewhere.
This is what I'm saying. So they was Chris and Chris. So Atlantic Square is the mall in Atlanta that everybody goes to. That's basically you could take a beat and go to the mall and just see whatever's going on. If you wear clothes that ain't supposed to be right, go to Lenox, somebody will tell you. If you look crazy, go to Lenox, they'll tell you. If you're famous, you go to Lenox, the mall will shut down. It's like that was little barometer. So I'm like, yo, we got to go to the mall, and we got to get the same reaction from people that y'all was getting when I saw y'all. I said, if y'all can figure out how to get that same reaction at another mall, because they was at Greenbrier, they was at the All Black Mall. So you go to, you know, a mixed mall and the reaction's different, then it won't be what I was thinking. So one of the kids, Chris Smith, had on a jumper and he had it on the regular way. And I was like, you should flip it around. By the way, it was like 100 size bigger than what it was supposed to be anyway. So he could flip it around. His body wouldn't even touch the size. That's how big the jumper was. So he flipped it around and we went to the mall. And me and Chris was regular. Me and brown skin Chris. But light skin Chris had his jump on. And when he hit the mall, I saw something I never seen before in my life. I don't know why people even reacted the way they reacted. I still don't even understand that. Because I haven't seen that happen to nobody else in the history.
But why'd you say flip it around?
I don't know. It was just because we was trying things. Like back then.
I think it was God.
Back then, we would put on knee pads just to put on knee pads. Right, back then, we would put on like, let's go to a hockey. Like for him, if it was a photo shoot, we would go to the hockey store. Like, you know, if you remember, Chris Cross was wearing hockey jerseys. They was wearing all kind, anything sports. Chris Cross was in it. That was their thing. So, like, we would go to the store and, like, see what hockey guys would wear and be like, you know what? You should wear that hockey mask, or you should wear, just to try it, just to be different. And Left Eye was a big influence of this, saying, you guys got to try something else. I'm going to do this when my record come out. And I'm going to do, like, she was talking crazy like that. So she was always talking about wearing wild glasses and the big glasses that you saw in the videos and all this. Like, we always was just trying things. You know what I'm saying? Like, they would go to the barbershop and get the whole city of Atlanta cut in the back of their head. Like, if you was really into doing that, then you was really to try anything. So the backwards jeans just was like a day of us trying
to find our instant way.
I seen people tripping over each other. I saw girls wowing.
How old are they at the time? Like,
they
12?
Was 12.
Okay.
I'm and India didn't have no record. I'm like, this is amazing. If these guys get one hit record. Now, at this point, I didn't know how to make a hit record. I had just came off Silk Times Leather. We didn't have a hit record. So I didn't know how to make a hit record. I just was thinking in my mind, if I could get a hit record.
With this look,
it's no stopping us.
Did you guys have a deal with Starter?
No.
Because those Starter jerseys that you have the jersey jacket joints?
They called us and they let us come to their warehouse here in New York, like in Staten Island. And we went to their warehouse and we went crazy. I tell you, like, I swear I've never seen this much Starter ever in my life. And in Atlanta, people was getting killed for Starter jackets. So
real.
It was like we found crack. That's how we felt.
Oh, no.
That's how I felt. Like, we found the crack house. They let us get every piece of everything.
And you guys had rare shit that you never saw anywhere else.
Everything that we wanted, they let us have it. And once these kids' records came out, they were sending so many boxes of Starter. Like, please wear this. They had so many Starters jackets. I still have so many Starter jackets that people, like, I have to watch people when they come to my house because they want to steal them because they can't get them no more.
You have the original ones,
yeah.
Though.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Unfortunately, they're all size extra small. I mean, they were 12.
No, they're so super big.
Oh, my God. I forgot they're all big.
Yeah, they're super big. Like, I can't even wear them no more. Like, they size double X.
And you're like, this is crazy. Like, how did I ever wear this?
Yeah. You wore it back then.
Yeah, I would. Like, that was it.
Well, okay, we got to talk about, do we have to talk about clearing the Michael Jackson sample? Wasn't Michael? Well, I thought the Jacksons were very tight on clearance. Like, weren't they involved?
No.
What happens? How did the clearance work? It was no problem?
No clearance.
No clearance?
I mean, it was a clearance. Oh, by the way, no, it was no clearance because I was new and I'm a young producer and writer. I didn't know nothing about no clearance. I put so many samples on their album and I got to pay so many people and learn how to pay people from that album.
Did you end up making any money from the album?
Shitloads.
You still made shitloads of money?
Shitloads.
So like,
we sold 8 million records.
And what percentage would you have to give for the dun dun dun?
I mean, I remember Eazy-E. By the way, I didn't pay Eazy-E for Little Boys in the Hood, and just that line where he says, "Boys in the Hood," he got a penny off every record that was sold.
That's it.
Wait, this is after the fact? They sued you after, or?
I mean, it was the deal that was made.
Clear.
Did you ever talk? Did Eazy ever reach out? Did you ever communicate with him?
Yeah, we talked.
It was cool.
I mean,
was fine.
He got his money.
Everyone was straight. And the Jackson estate wasn't tough?
Nah, I mean, you know, Motown, they clear their samples over there.
They're down.
I mean, they want you to, that's what they want you to do.
They want you to sample them, and they want to get used.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sample's that. That sample's always used.
Yeah, it was used a bunch. Well, but it's funny though because like Ebro always tells the story of when whatchamacallit. Oh God, there's so much to ask you about. Sorry. When Ebro's friend produced the SWV Right Here Human Nature record, which
well,
was
see, that's Michael. That, Michael
that's
and
Michael, that's Michael solo.
Yeah, Michael and Barry yeah, Gordy is two different things.
Those songs
yeah, right, so it's different. Yeah,
yeah
totally
Barry
different.
Barry Gordy wants you to he
just
wants
sample
to
away.
Whereas Michael could chose was a little bit more
yeah,
picky with what you can use.
Yeah, he's not gonna let you do it.
Just take anything. Yeah. All right, so Warm It Up is also a smash. I Missed the Bus is a big record.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even.
Can I know the Supercat story? I just want to know it.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
The Supercat story actually was interesting because
it'll segue to All Right.
Supercat was on Columbia.
Oh yeah.
Right,
yeah,
so
yeah.
it was like the label was trying to like
right, connect,
you know,
it.
Connect something, and I was my Brooklyn connection from being here.
Right.
I actually sat on Eastern Parkway and watched the Jamaican Day Parade come down.
So and when is that?
Sunday.
This weekend.
And I was
Monday. This coming Monday. Yeah.
So I actually was deeply into reggae music from that point, from being out there. I had mixtapes that I was listening to. I was into it heavy.
So you already
knew Little John, and that's it.
Yeah.
So do you already know Supercat, who he was?
No, I didn't know. I mean, I had heard him on records. I heard his records before. I heard him on some couple of records. What's crazy is Koof was big at this point. Is that the name of the song?
Sometimes Koof is the name of a song, yeah.
Sometimes my man forget. Mm-hmm. Forget
that's
forget.
Not Supercat, though.
No, I'm just saying that's like
a record.
That's a record.
Big
that's
record,
like,
yeah.
That's the one record I can remember at this particular point in time. And so I was heavy into it. And I also was, I had got a hit record. So this is what you got to think. My mindset was, I'm from Atlanta. I got a hit record, and I had it untraditionally of whatever I thought what Atlanta was. So I have to, I'm figuring out how do I continue to keep going and how do I keep getting my music out to people as opposed to it becoming just like, you know, and I'm catching flack from guys like this guy. You wouldn't
not
say
at the time,
that, but
I was 12.
It was a bunch of guys like you that was like Jermaine Dupri on produces kid rap, this is kitty shit and da 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 da.
I probably did feel that way at the time.
So
I was probably hating it.
I'm getting mad like, yo, this is real hip hop. It's just They're kids,
right?
You know what I mean, but whatever. So you know, I'm actually meeting the actual hip hop monster that you meet when you have
a hit,
success, right?
Yeah.
So I'm hitting that wall, and I'm like, you know what? We gonna keep doing things that no kids would ever do. I'm gonna put a dancehall artist on y'all record, and when we did the some of the try to rhyme, but they can't rhyme like this. That part attracted a lot of dancehall fans, oddly enough. We did a bunch of shows in Jamaica with Criss Cross. That, I sparked my idea. I'm going to put somebody on. I'm going to put a real roster on this record, and it's gone.
And then Columbia wanted to have you work with Supercat anyway.
Well, I mean, it just became a spark for, like, if you're going to do it, put Supercat. I mean, at this point, Columbia had everybody. Mad Cobra, they had Bougie. They had everybody on Columbia. At this
so
point.
You could choose.
Yeah, you could choose.
So did the remix pop off at all?
Oh yeah,
the remix crazy. Went too. Did
Supercat remix was crazy. I mean, I
because in DC,
I play.
In DC,
New
York, I remember
they
that
only
one.
Played that version here in New York. Once it got to a point where the song was so big, then it was just
the
like
that
it
was
just
the
became
club.
The remix.
That's the club.
That was the
yeah, the Jamaican one, version was just Supercat.
And then, of course, it leads to the first single off the next album, which I think is the most one of the more underrated rap records from that era. All Right, which was a great fucking song. Like, to me, that was a grown-up. That was when I was like, okay. Even though I was the same age as Criss Cross, exactly, I still, Jump was cool, but I knew it was for kids, whereas All Right was a song. That was, to me, like, it really resonated. Did All Right become big at all? It became a pretty decent song.
Yeah, it was a big song. I mean, you know, coming off of Jump, it was a big, you know, any record that comes off an artist that sells.
How long did you wait to drop the next album? Like, a year?
Not long.
It was quick, right?
Yeah, right behind it. Because, I mean, they mentality, like, the thing with Criss Cross was that they were actually the same kids that I saw in that mall. So their minds was moving like that. Although they was blowing up as Criss Cross, they was changing constantly. Like, they grew, they was 16 at 13.
Okay, we got to ask you about this. What was the girl situation like for
Ridiculous.
Them?
Ridiculous. I had girls, like, give me pussy just to meet them.
I mean, And weren't you like, were you getting pussy from girls who were like too old that you shouldn't even care about?
It didn't matter. I didn't know no better probably either.
You were just like, hey, what's going on here?
It was, you know, I mean, got, you know, at time it get crazy and it gets dangerous and you know you got to watch out for it. But it was like, you know, you would go to your room and it was like girls in your room already. I'm like, how the fuck did they get in here?
Oh, well. How'd you get in here? We'll figure it out later. Boy,
yeah, like, how did you get in here? I'm sorry. And be naked and be ready. Like, no.
It was that crazy.
And it was the older ones. It was actually the beginning of me seeing, like, the future of what my next artist would be that became that age, which is Bow Wow. When I seen, like, what Bow Wow started doing was at 15.
His segue game is incredible.
And 14, dating 18-year-old girls and 21-year-old girls. And I saw that in the crisscross era. And so it wasn't amazing. It wasn't amazing to me as it was the other people that was around
me. Because you'd already seen it.
Bow Wow talked about it a lot more than...
Well, Bow Wow was more...
A ladies' man,
right? His raps and what I wrote for him was more about girls. Crisscross was all Run DMC because this is what they saw. They are the only group that I can say that I had that saw Run DMC perform, actually, before Jam Master Jay passed away.
What, they saw Down with the King?
Everything. They was in Down with the King video.
Oh my God, I forgot they're in Down with the King video. Yeah. I forgot.
Yeah.
So Crisscross is Run DMC.
That was
two guys back and forth.
That's all they. Yeah. That's who they wanted to be.
One, yeah. The thing about it, they're exactly my age, right? 35.
Yeah.
So like that. So that, of course, Run DMC was
the
dream.
They wanted to be better than them. They wanted to be Run DMC. That was it.
What was the last big moment for Crisscross? Was there anything after Tonight's the Night that was
Tonight's the Night.
Tonight is amazing.
It's a great
thing. I mean, we had a lot of moments because Tonight's the Night, I did remix with Redman, and I actually had him redo his whole part of the hook that I took. So it was like, we had a bunch of moments. But it was also getting overlooked because people kept trying to make it seem like we weren't hip-hop.
Yeah, kiddie rap.
Yeah.
At what point during there did you sign the Brat?
The second album. She rapped on the bomb.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And how long did that process take, getting her going?
It was just me, basically. I wasn't really prepared for a female rapper. I was in denial
of
female.
You didn't have a full, like,
female. Oh, Scythe is inappropriate.
That's a good segue. Good thing you're not ready for a girl rapper. The Brat is a good segue
to get you there.
Oh, God. Yeah, I was in denial. I wasn't really, like, I wasn't feeling female rap. None whatsoever. And I was just in total denial of actually putting it out. And I was actually, like, I really told her a bunch of times, I don't know even how
to
do this.
But what about Left Eye?
Left Eye was gone at that point.
No, but I'm saying at the time you were working with her.
Yeah, but see, that's
way?
What I'm saying. That's probably why I didn't come out.
Is it just,
out.
Was it about the music or is it just complicated?
Well, I couldn't, I'm the type of person that I have to figure out a problem in my head before it's even heard. Right? So therefore, if I can't figure it out in my head before it's put out into the world, I just try to abandon it, right? That's just something crazy about me. So with the Brat, I couldn't figure out how I was going to get you guys to like her. I could like it because I'm a producer, you know, into it. But I was always saying, how do we get guys to ride in their car and play a female rapper's record?
And Pinga is still asking that question.
That's a hard question to this day.
I figured it out, but it was the hardest thing ever.
The B-side helped.
Functified would help.
Functified helped, too. I love Functified.
Yeah, Functified.
Was Functified the first thing?
Functified is the first record.
Functified's
a great song. That's the thing. Which is the one that with the crazy video with everyone in it? Give It to You?
Yeah, Give It to You.
That video is amazing.
Yeah, Give It to You helped. Give It to You sparked the B-side.
Biggie's in the video for Give It to You, right?
Yeah.
So how did the Biggie thing come to be?
Well, Biggie, Brat, and Craig Mack was all on tour as a new school tour.
Oh, I remember that. I remember when I was on tour with Junior Mafia, and they would see the Brat sometimes, like, in the airport. They would lose their shit.
Yeah, she was the homie.
Oh yeah, that was their girl.
Yeah, so it was like all they was all like a little tour. This was like the little tour. They would put those three artists on tour. So then me and Big became like the best of friends because Big would come to me and Brett was busting his ass too. It was just crazy because Brett had the biggest song out of. I mean, Craig Mack record was stupid, but then Funkdafy was crazier, and then Biggie was just like the great rapper, and everybody was just like
waiting for his record.
Okay, but your songs ain't it, right? And he had Big Papa, and you know. People just wasn't on it yet. And he'd come to me and he was like, yo, you gotta make me a song. And I'm thinking about it today, like it's crazy that Biggie was telling me I had to make him a record. Cause he had it the whole time. It's just timing wise. But he was like, you gotta make me a record. You gotta put me on a song with Honey Den. You gotta put me on a song with Honey Den. Mm-hmm. So he came to Atlanta. I did the Big Papa remix because he thought that I was his key to success. That's how I did the Big Papa remix. JD, you got to do the remix. You'll get me on the radio. So I did the Big Papa remix. And while we at my house, he was like, where Brad at? Tell her come over here and smoke. I called her. They start smoking. I played the outstanding beat. And I just kept playing with it. And I'm like, let's make a song. And I put the beat up, start doing it. And it just happened.
Why was it? Was it all? Did it just sound like a B-side to you? What about it? Was
I called it that? I'm just hip hop. Right. I'm just a hip hopper. And I thought. By the way, it was on the flip side of Give It to You.
Right.
So it was a B-side.
Right. It did end up as an actual.
Yeah,
B-side.
It was a B-side. But I always wanted everything that I saw. If it was hip hop, anything that I saw in hip hop, I wanted it. So if you had a song that was called B-sides and. Back, I'm gonna make the same thing. I want beats. I got those two.
So okay, so Brat obviously does quite well.
Yeah,
she was very successful. Are y'all still cool?
Yeah, she just drove me to get some food last night.
You literally just hung out with her last night?
I mean, she's in the studio
here
in Atlanta.
Oh, you were in Atlanta last night.
Yeah.
So Brat does quite well. Is Bow Wow next?
No.
Jagged Edge.
Oh, Jagged Edge.
God.
Yeah.
Jagged Edge.
I mean, I don't know. There's so much.
Jagged Edge.
Oh, you know, I fucking played that record first, yo.
Which one?
Yeah, you did.
First record.
Yeah,
yeah,
me and Brat, the way you talked to me.
Because I had the sample that the nigga,
He's pulling it up. Look.
If it's a record.
By the way, this was another time in hip hop that nobody can't talk about either.
Wait,
like,
what's it called?
We had a Jagged Edge party at. The tunnel, huh?
I don't have it.
You don't, Scythe.
I'm fucking up.
Woo! You are falling apart.
Pull my hard drive out. It's in there.
No, don't pull the hard drive. You don't have to do that. So was the first Jagged Edge single?
Yeah, with me and Brad.
Had the beat that the who used it? I think Helter Skelter or something like that.
Doom 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 doom. Not that one.
I don't know what you're doing.
Come on, let me do it. Bloom 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 bloom.
It's the basically. It was the Helter Skelter beat. But one of them niggas with
not let the brains blow
hi hat on it.
Oh, perfect.
And it sounded fucking.
Yeah. By the way,
talk about yourselves. I'm fine.
You're so good at taking songs that have been used once and then sprucing them up to make them the R&B version of it that makes it like work, which is an art.
What was it called again?
Huh?
What was the song called again?
The Way You Talk to Me.
I gave that record to Flex, yo.
Yeah.
Flex?
Yeah, Flex went crazy with that Flex. Song. I don't thank him for that.
That was the first thing from.
Jagged Edge. And he was actually the person who was actually moving the record. We couldn't really get too much movement nowhere. It was really odd. It was R&B, okay. Definitely. But it was, you know, Flex actually put them, like I said, he had a party for them at the tunnel. It actually curved Jagged Edge to be more hip-hop, which was actually what I wanted. So they was more or less the hip-hop group. Hip hop R&B group as opposed to Boyz II Men and,
right.
and the other guys.
Yes, and they kept that. That's what sort of makes them them.
Yeah, so I talk about that now. Even when I got a new Jagged Edge album about to drop in like.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fuck out of here.
Yeah.
You love Jagged Edge, huh?
Love Jagged Edge.
Nice guys, too.
Yeah.
Are we at Jagged Edge?
Yeah, we at Jagged
Edge. Where's Brian Michael Cox?
He's not even the pitcher yet. I don't know him at this point.
He's third album or something like that, right?
Yeah, he came in on Jagged's second album.
Yeah. Those songs, man. That nice. Combo.
But that's what I'm saying. Me and him, we
no,
just...
No. I'm a subsidiary, so deaf next to JD. This yeah, hope if I baby, keep him friends. My mentality happen to be living lavish with formalities OGC, I think.
No, it's Helter Skelter. Let the Brains Blow.
Let the Brains Blow. That's
and
it.
Showbiz and AG used it too.
But Pete might have used it too.
Yo, I don't know that record,
no,
yo.
This record is crack. Crack.
I need that now. I need that in my life.
I don't even have that song. Crack.
Yo, I got oh, no, but you know what? I have to have it. I have to. I was getting service.
It was kind of, nobody cared about them when this came out. You might not have it.
What was the next record that came out after that one?
Well, after that we had.
That's pretty good.
After that we had a like that song didn't really do anything.
By the way, did you hear the Helter Skelter song before you made that?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're ahead. Have you ever seen my
records?
What is called?
Discography.
No, Fuse.
Your crate diggers?
Crate diggers. No, you ever seen my crate diggers? No. Yeah. I bought a whole record store one day.
I would like to when I come down to Atlanta, I might have to come check things out.
Yeah, I bought like a whole record store one day. It was going out of business and they had like country music on one side and they had all this soul records on this side and they had every record on the black record. And I was like, you know, I was in the streets acting like a D-boy, but I was in the music industry and I was just like, how much? And it's like $10,000. And I was like, hey, yo, lucky day.
Give you me had it on you.
Record. I had it on me. I
had it on you.
That's a dream. You bought the whole store.
The whole store.
What'd you do with all the country records?
That's amazing. That's yeah, where's the country at? Let me get some of that.
The country record?
The country record.
I didn't buy the record. I let them have the country record.
Oh, that people. Yeah, that's a bonus. Yeah, you took the hip-hop.
Yeah, I wanted all of... Because I was getting hip-hop and...
And the soul and the R&B and everything.
Everything black I bought out of the store.
Damn.
And they had it separated because
they had
South.
It separated everything. All in the...
everything. Segregated. All, even record stores.
It's still in the plastic, by the way. When you come to the studio in Atlanta, these records are still in the studio. In the...
Oh, because you didn't get through all of them yet.
I haven't go through the records, no. It's new records and everything in there.
How long ago did you buy this?
At least 15 years ago.
And you still haven't opened them?
A lot of them, no.
Oh, my God. But hold on, were you buying records before that, too, just always?
Yeah. I was more like...
We skipped over the DJ part.
Yeah, you didn't even talk about DJing.
Okay, well, the DJ part goes back to the Fresh Fest because I learned from... I was influenced from DJing on the Fresh Fest. Grandmaster D from Houdini actually showed me how to DJ. So I actually learned from the best. You know what I mean? I was watching them, and I didn't really want to know how to do what I'm doing now. I wanted to learn how to battle DJ. I wanted to do tricks.
Of course,
that's all it was. So that's why I think I was attracted to Clark Kent because this guy was DJing and going back to back, and he would jump over the turntables.
I don't know what you mean. He would literally jump over the turntables.
Yeah, this is guy, with like the name Clark Kent, like.
That would be a thing that he would do?
Jump over the turn and like this. Over. The same way, you know, like when you see Scratch and he be taking his shirt, like they was trying to do the most dumbest shit you could possibly think of on turntables, and I'd be sitting there like,
how are you right now on turntables?
As far as what?
Like DJs.
No, I know you're DJ, but I mean bad if you wanted to cut, really go in.
I mean I ain't did that in forever. You know what I mean?
But you call down a party.
Yeah, I mean I could bust a bunch of DJs' ass on DJing just flat out, but
picking records.
I just want to just like scratch back and forth. I don't, you know, my left hand.
Put Criminology up right now.
Criminology. It's your battle song. Yo, so real quick, did you write all? How much Jagged Edge stuff did you write?
Well, Jagged Edge became the first group that wrote. Most of
he allowed them.
No, they came with music, so it was like, you know, I had to,
twins,
as
right?
As I started making, and we also we skipped over Escape, by the way. But as I started writing, I wrote Escape's album, Crisscross, the Brat.
You wrote all of Escape's album,
all of them. Yeah,
but then they became writers. No,
yeah. Later on in life, but not while we was in the group.
No.
But yeah, I mean, and the style that Candy.
So why did you not know Big at the time?
When
he dissed the shit out of him?
No, I didn't know him. And what's crazy is what's crazy is when he dissed him, I was into him.
Yeah.
So I went to meet him, and he felt crazy. Like I was going to meet him, and he felt a certain type of way. Yeah. He thought I was gonna really
probably
be like,
a lot
wow.
of people. That
he thought I was gonna wild out on him, and that song was only big here in New York, by the way. It wasn't like a song that really put impression on the girls. And the girls was like, you know, whatever. I mean, at that time, the whole industry was calling them ugly. Everybody in the industry was saying Escape is these ugly girls. And every time I would do an interview or something and somebody said it, I would say, but bring somebody in here that can sing better than them, and then we'll have a conversation. And they couldn't find nobody. The only person that could sing better than Escape at that time was En Vogue. And, you know, that's pretty high on the totem pole.
Yes, very high. so we did miss Escape. Jagged Edge, a master, huge success. I got to say, personal favorite, JD.
Sorry. Candy was in Escape.
Yes. Yeah.
Tiny.
Yep. Yeah.
And who's the other two?
Tamika and Tasha, the Scott sisters.
Were they anybody? Did they become anyone after that?
Uh-huh. My personal, what's your favorite JD rapping moment? Because I'm going to give you two real quick. You think about it.
I don't know.
In My Bed remix.
Yeah.
And, surprising. I actually love the Where the Party At remix. I always play the remix to Where the Party At. I feel like I'm the only person that still plays it.
I would say Welcome to Atlanta.
Welcome to, and you produce Welcome to Atlanta?
Yeah.
You're crazy for that one, JD.
The first album, the 1492 joint had
1472, you
1472,
son of a bitch.
Sorry, I thought it was Columbus. You had joints on there, man.
Let's talk about how slept on.
Yeah, very slept
history
on.
Is that this is the first man who put DJ Premier and Snoop Dogg on a record together. That
Nas had a song in it too, right?
A bunch of things. Like that's the first record that Kanye produced.
Yeah.
It's on Protected 1472.
Yeah.
From D Dot? Through D Dot?
Yeah, through D Dot. But
Which song did he do?
The actual first song on my album was produced by Kanye, with Nas rapped by himself.
Yes, Nas.
Yeah.
I just went through my record collection.
Like I'm learning.
I figured you must be.
I'm learning. I don't even know. Like, I'm sitting there like, wow.
I'm going to play your record just because you're being a good sport.
Late night on tonight. All right, boom. There we go.
I'm playing your record tonight because you're being a good sport right
now. There we go.
And this is supposed to be about you. But
that
I just went through my, like, I went through my entire collection like a year ago to get rid of like the extras and get it down to where it needs to be. And the amount of Jermaine Dupri promos I had, I must have fucking robbed. What was So Def?
No, they. I'm gonna keep it real with you. Columbia.
They
sent out a shitload of them too.
I had the
Columbia promo department.
Like 10 copies of everything, and still got my 4 or 5 in the stash. Like
they Columbia promotion department. Every record that you put out from like 98 to 2002, they would cycle them around more than once. Like the Columbia promotion department was actually on point. My Nas records were like that too.
Yeah.
A lot of shit. By the way,
you know that's because Def Jam was there, so they learned. I mean, that was like a hip hop.
By the way, you worked with Mariah Carey quite a bit as well.
Yeah, Usher too.
And Usher. I mean, I don't know. Where do you... I know he has
your
time.
Your first Usher?
Not the first Usher.
Not the first album.
It's funny that y'all guys skipped over Money Anything. Y'all do...
No, we're not there yet. I'm not there yet.
That's 1472.
No. It's not even...
It's on 1472?
Yeah.
But let's not even talk about that.
It's my first single.
Can I not disrespect you in any way, but we've told the story about you coming to the tunnel with Hov a billion times.
Okay, right,
like, we don't even need you for that story. Right.
It's history.
I have the videotape. It's been documented of people hanging from the rafters to see that show.
Yo, was that?
That put Jay over the top.
I was about to say, at the time, where was that timing-wise around in terms of Big Pimpin' and Hard Knock Life?
No, that wasn't out.
Way before.
It was before all of that.
Yeah. The biggest record Jay-Z had at that point was Ain't No Nigga. At that point.
Yeah, and that's not that big.
And that wasn't that big.
Oh, and so, wait, and Can I Get It was the next one, right? Can I Get It was out,
no.
too.
No,
yes. No, Can I Get It was first. Can I Get It was first.
Can I Get It came before.
Rush Hour. That was Rush Hour soundtrack.
Came before Money Anything.
But Money Anything is much bigger.
You said about Ain't No Nigga.
Yeah. No. Money, Ain't No.
Yeah. Can I Get It.
Ain't No.
Can I Get It.
Yeah.
Money Anything.
Yeah.
Now, Money Anything is the one that, like, I mean, there are a lot of people that you know, for the main, like my wife is a great barometer of that, right? Now my wife knows Jay-Z's music really well since she's been with me and since he's blown up. But at the time, that was what put Jay-Z truly on the map for like a random white girl from Maryland.
That's the craziest statement. Like when I be hearing people say it, it's crazy to me because I was, you know, you get making the music. So I wasn't even paying no attention to if people didn't like Jay-Z. You know what I was dealing with? I was dealing with the rap monster. And the rap monster was poking me every day like, Jermaine, you make records that go to the radio.
Yeah.
You make singing.
People love being affected by negativity that I know you don't love it, but you can't help it. I know.
Successful negativity.
Yo, it's like what Wale still deals with. I mean, yo, you make songs for girls that women like. I'm like, so? No rappers can figure out how to do that. That's great. You should do that really well.
But listen, I wasn't, for my album, this is me thinking like I'm gonna do a Jermaine Dupri album that doesn't reflect what Jermaine Dupri does as a producer. That's how I'm thinking. So for my album, I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna give you what my heart genuinely likes.
Which is rap. At the time, just rap music.
My heart genuinely likes rap music that don't have no singing, that's samples, that might not even have a hook in it, right? So the first single I deliver to Sony is Money Ain't a Thing. They look at me and say, who the fuck is Jay-Z? And why would you put this out? When you, by the way, I gave them one single, The Party Continues with Usher, mm-hmm. and Me and the Brat. That was the first song.
I remember.
And they was like, why don't you have more songs like this, singing? I said, no. Jay-Z. If they would have known who Jay-Z was, or they would have listened to me, Columbia, at that time, I would be 10 times bigger than I am now.
Well, you want to know something crazy?
What?
You know who I got offered for one Epstein last week, but we just didn't, I wasn't able to pull together, and I didn't know enough to, Steve Arrington.
No way. I was just about to say that, Steve Arrington. I used to play that record all the time, and then when he made that record.
You used to play it before that record?
Yeah, that record is fire.
Well, I know I have it on 45. Come on, let's not be crazy.
Wait, why? But,
you know what's crazy?
No.
Where I got it from was from
I guess I'll try to get him.
NWA album.
Yeah.
So I used to love the NWA album. I'm like, yo. Mm-hmm. And I used to think, like, Ice Cube rocking over this beat, and you can't hear it on the radio.
Yeah, right.
Like you said, I take samples. I'm like, I'm going to flip this sample. And I put that on. I'm like, there's no way. And as soon as I played, people was like, you know Ice Cube. I'm like, I don't care about Ice Cube. It's about to be me and Jay-Z. Mm-hmm. And people was like, who is Jay-Z? And I'm like, don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. Just watch.
Do you have to replay it?
No,
yeah. It's clean. Is there a part of this thing?
Oh yeah, the beginning of the record.
It's straight off the top.
Yeah, that's right. I guess. Oh yeah, before it goes into the chorus, it starts out with that.
Yeah.
So, Saif, we have a limited few minutes left with Jermaine Dupri.
Okay.
I know there's one thing I would like to ask. Okay. That's a little bit unrelated to. Well, it's related to his career, but also related to his personal life and how those things converge. By the way, I want you to know that I'm resisting because there are. When we have guests here, we don't really talk about personal life. Except for as it relates to music. You're like the only person that, like, deep down inside, I would want to ask personal life questions to.
He's a fucking Janet.
Because I'm a fucking Janet. I'm a Stan it.
I think he went to the concert by himself.
By myself. No, but it's nice that you said when I was a kid. Because I was like 17. No, I was in college. I was 19. It was the Velvet Rope tour. I went to Velvet Rope by myself. By myself.
Okay.
Velvet Rope was iconic. So, but I'm not going to ask you about her specifically, even though off the air I would gladly do that. But on the air, do you have any Michael stories that you could share? Because you were basically family for a long time. I mean, that was several years where he was like a brother-in-law.
Yeah, it's weird, though. It's very weird because it's like when you in a building with a king and a queen, you got to choose a side.
Oh.
That may be all you have to say.
That's all I got to say. That's all I'm going to say because you got to understand what I'm saying at that point.
Right.
So whoever side you are on, that's
so some Game of Thrones shit.
Yeah, you either
pick
one
side
or you die.
But does that mean that you didn't have a? But you still had a. Did you have a pleasant rapport with him?
You either on one side or
the other. Team Janet all day. Well, guess what? You know what? That's where I would be.
Yeah. I mean, no, but you.
Who's
I
a
mean,
bigger asshole? Jim Jam or Terry Lewis?
You have to do that as a. You know, as a. You said what?
He goes, who's a bigger asshole, Jimmy Jam or Terry Lewis?
Are you crazy? Why would you pick that to say? That's just crazy.
Yeah, just wanted to separate two
actually,
people.
Actually, the nicest guys.
Really?
In the
world. Yeah. Those dudes are fucking
yeah,
talented,
the nicest
man.
Guys in the world.
He was about to say something else too.
Sorry,
you interrupted.
No, I actually was just gonna say that. You know, it's like you when you're a boyfriend, it's not. You can't even. You only have no. You don't have no chance to even pick a side. It's like.
Oh yeah, you're nothing.
You better be on the right side. So it's like you know. You can't. It's no relations or no kicking it or nothing.
All right, so I wanted to ask about Michael. I did. That was a very interesting answer. What else do you have? I mean, because there's Mariah. I don't know if that's something. I mean, there's...
I left out a bunch of hip hop. Like, I watch this. I watch you guys. I always want to talk about hip hop.
Rap Monster.
Yeah, the Rap Monster. Man.
What hip hop?
Every time
what?
When I see him, I'm always thinking about the Rap Monster.
Yo, when he
I
saw
seen
me,
him in LA. And
I know.
I'm
he approached me like, y'all don't want to have Jermaine Dupri on the show?
Jermaine, it's always pleasant catching up.
No, with me, everyone thinks I'm like this asshole who wouldn't appreciate it. I was like,
no,
what can we please?
I think you're a rapper. What rap guy? Shit? You're like one of these rap guys.
I'm a rap nerd. I'm just a big fan.
Yeah, but they look at you as a rap guy. That's who, how you are. You're a rap guy to people.
What do you
want to
say before
like
you have to leave?
If I just feel, I mean, it's a bunch of rap.
Like what other rap stuff do we not?
Let me show you. Let me show you what I tweeted today. And what I just put on my Instagram. That's so you'll show, just so you just see what I'm talking about. Just say what I said right now.
This day in hip hop, you're gonna love this. August 26, 2003, So Def, we dropped the Young Bloods album, Drankin' Partners.
I respect that.
You love Sean Paul.
Love Sean Paul.
All right, so that's a hip hop moment that people leave out my life. Like on that, on the same day, I put out the Young Bloods in 2003, and I'm dropping a new artist in 14. And, you know, for me, that's...
Sorry you had success, bro. Sorry.
He's had so much success.
Sorry you had success that we want to talk about it.
So much success. I know. Hold on. Hey,
let's talk about Capone, yo.
Alexa, I'm still in the middle of an interview, but I want to ask you one question.
Fuck.
All right, don't make me look bad. What would you say was your first favorite Jay-Z song?
She's going to say Hard Knock Life.
Oh, man.
She's gonna say Hard Knock Life.
What's the Jay-Z song you always want me to play in the club?
Don't lead it on the way.
If I'm DJing, you always want to hear this song. It's on our wedding playlist, etc.
Wedding playlist? Come on.
I'm not. That's not a hint.
That's all you. But how many Jay-Z songs you got on there?
A lot.
Alexa? Peter, I don't know. There's so many.
It's a collaboration song. There are two people on it.
What's your favorite Jay-Z song where he does a song with another guy with a J in his name?
And it's about money? How about that? By the way, a
Jay-Z song about money. Oh, wow.
Help me there. All right, the point is, we're finishing up with Jermaine Dupri. I'm going to call you right back, okay? But I just said, okay. I said Money and a Fang was like your first favorite Jay-Z song.
In the following Jaguars, with your four lanes, top down, screaming out Money and a Fang.
Say, there you go. She made up for it. You balanced it out. All right, honey, I'll hit you back. Love you.
Right.
Bye.
Okay.
She knew. She was scared. So yeah, I did alley-oop it.
And by the way, that line right there, right? So I was going to tell you about this little crazy story. I picked Jay-Z up from the airport. He come in the airport. And he like, so what we going to do? We only had no song idea, right? We don't have no idea. On the way to the airport, I'm listening to him say that. I'm driving fast, switching four lanes, trying to get to the airport so that I'm not late for him. And I'm in a Phantom. I'm in my Bentley. I'm driving super fast. And I heard him say, Deep in the South. If he wouldn't have said that, I would have never put that on that record. When he says, I'm deep in the South kicking up top game, I said, he's talking about down here. So he knows about it. We got to use that line. As soon as he got in the car, I said, this is what the hook going to be. And as soon as we got to the studio, I ain't even had a beat made. We got to the studio, I stopped fucking with beats, and I put that beat on, and in 2 minutes, he had his rap. And I was like,
Jesus.
Where did this come from? Like, did you already have this written? Mm. He's like, no, I just wrote it in my head. And this is like the first time I was witnessing somebody rap without paper. And I was like, I got to learn that trick. I don't know what you just did.
Oh, we got to wrap up. By the way. You know, there's a lot of So Def on 45.
Yeah.
I have Young Bloods Dam on 45.
You should have Tipsy on 45.
I don't, but it exists. I know Tipsy exists.
Yeah, Tipsy's big on like the 45.
How do we not spend more time on Jaquan?
Tipsy's a weird moment for me.
Why are you getting upset about it?
Watching L.A. Reid dance in his office to that record.
I was in his office. He looked scarred.
I was the Star Trek A&R, and he would be like, bring that kid up, the Pharrell kid, bring him up here. The one on Hot 97.
Oh, you.
Yeah, me. And then he was in his office playing that record, like dancing. I'm like, with slippers on. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? What am I doing right now?
Yo, JD, this has been a treat for us.
Thank you. I'll be back.
Royce Rizzy.
Come back, man.
Yo, we'll Royce Rizzy.
Been a history session for me.
And Royce Rizzy again?
That's the guy.
Right, yeah, right.
And All's Well That Ends Well, because you're getting to spin tonight on Sife's Mix Show. So everything works
that's
out
super
great.
Super dope, man.
And you're going to like the song. It's going to be up your alley, actually.
All right. That's all that matters, actually.
Yeah.
That's what matters.
And we just wanted to, when I saw JD in L.A., I got to tell you, JD, no bullshit. I walked away. I called my brother. I'm like, yo, JD just came up to me, knew who I was. Like, I was geeked just that you even knew who I was. And I'd met you before with Clinton Sparks, like, in years ago in Vegas. We actually went to a club night of yours. But I still didn't think that you would come up to me.
He's always in the know.
I know. He came up and he was like, yo, why haven't you had me, you and Sife had come to the show?
I'd be really feeling like people don't want to talk to me. And I'd be like, why?
I will say he is underappreciated. You are slightly underappreciated.
It's not that. With us.
No, not with us. No,
yes, you are underappreciated. But with us, we are just fucking losers who put this podcast together on a fucking...
I know. Who's in town? So he hit me and he goes, Jermaine Dupri's coming to town. I'm like, oh my God.
As soon as he said Jermaine, I was like, why haven't we done it before? You know? And he's always here.
Hey, but look on the bright side. At least we could tell JD that he's underappreciated. And it's not like when we told Keith Murray his album's underappreciated. He's like, fuck you mean underappreciated? And we're like,
Keith Murray almost killed us.
What's Keith Murray going to do in the battle, though? What do you think?
He's going to win. I think he's going to win.
You can talk about battles.
Yeah, Sife doesn't talk battle. But I would assume he'd win. I would think he'd be more savvy in that department. But, at the same time,
Fredro
brings a lot of energy. So, I don't know. But I love that everyone's talking about it. It means it's a good idea.
I got to see this one.
Jermaine Dupri, Royce Rizzy, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate y'all for having me.
Hip-hop.
Have that hi-hat.